Bet on Bears fans, another edition of the Chicago Bears podcast coming your way. Pat the Designer, Jason McKee in the building, fresh off of hearing the comments from Matt Eberflus, Caleb Williams, and Tremaine Edmonds. A little shocked there up at Halas Hall today. Yep. But some good stuff up at Halas today. Teams trying to turn the page and prepare for a Minnesota Vikings team that J-Mac, I've said the game plan for that day is going to be engage eight. Brian Flores is about to blitz all night, as once said by Coach Yosin. Remember the Titans. I don't want them to gain another yard.
Yeah. I mean, it's a team that we start with them defensively. The number one defense ranked against the run, you know, and then in terms of the pass, they want to make you one-dimensional. Why? Because they want to take away the run, make you put the ball in the air so they can tee off, you know, with what Brian Flores likes to do. Exotic blitzes, tries to confuse the quarterback at the line of scrimmage, but also tries to heat the quarterback up. And they do a good job of it. They've got three guys that have over, you got two guys with seven sacks. Alex Van Ginkle has eight sacks. I mean, dominant. Yeah, his pressure's coming from a neighbor. And they're relentless in their pass rush. You know what I mean? It could be Van Ginkle one day. It could be Jonathan, how you say his last name? Grenard? Jonathan Grenard the next play. So it's going to come in waves, and I think, you know, with this Bears offense, what we saw last week, I think you saw Thomas Brown, you know, shore up the protection. I think they did a really good job in pass protection last week. In particular, I want to shout out Roshan Johnson, who I thought did a really good job in pass protection. So, you know, we want to see more of that because you're going to need it this week if you want Caleb to continue to develop from what we saw last week. And then we look at his Vikings team offensively. I mean, you got Aaron Jones, who can do a lot of things. But it all starts with Justin Jefferson. I mean, he's second in the league in receiving. You know, he's going to be the most targeted guy on Sunday. Sam Darnold's looking for him early and often. And, you know, I'm excited. I'm excited to see, you know, him and Jalen Johnson lock up and see who's going to, you know, that's going to be a good matchup to watch. And, you know, they got so many weapons on offense. And Sam Darnold's done a good job with the opportunities he's had in Minnesota. So it's going to be a big task for the Bears. You know, I think the biggest thing for the Bears this week is they're going to be their biggest enemy in terms of mentally getting over, you know, what we talked about before we get on the pod, Pat, you know, losing like you did in D.C., coming back and losing, you know, not even showing up in the desert in Arizona and then losing to a rebuilding Patriots team and then losing the way you did last week against the Packers. Like, this is a mentally challenged team. And, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, what type of team we'll see on Sunday mentally. Like, this is hard. Like, we talked about, we've never seen a season like this. I've never.
Two seasons.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. We brought
up that J-Mac yesterday on the podcast, me and Courtney were on, that, you know, Bears had a 71% chance to win this game versus the Packers. Matt Eberflus has now lost five games with a 90-plus percent chance to win the game. They found a way to lose it, snatching victory from the jaws of defeat, or snatching defeat from the jaws of victory, I should say. And the DraftKings put out this stat that it is a 1 in 68 million chance that that happens. That's better odds, or that's worse odds than winning the Illinois lottery.
Ain't that crazy?
It's insane. I've never seen 2 years like that. I mean, at this point, I know it sounds too, maybe it's too meathead or it's too fan to say that this coach is just a coach that brings a losing culture. But J-Mac, when I hear a stat like that, I don't know what else to say. Like, they've lost games in the most miraculous fashions that I have ever seen in my NFL fandom. And I've seen a lot of like wild losses at the end of games.
Yeah, it's tough, man. It's tough, and to be, you know, in the locker room, seeing the guys' faces and seeing their, you know, the body language coming off the field. It's tough, man. Especially last week, a game in which, you know, you lose 10 straight to the Packers. You played well coming off a bad performance against the Patriots, and you really should have won that game. And it just, in an instant, it goes from a stadium, you know, when they're lining up for that kick, a stadium that's just pumped with so much anticipation, ready to explode because, you know, we've overcome, you know, so much adversity. We finally got the Packers at home at Soldier Field. And just to see that momentum switch and just to see the whole mood of that stadium, you know, just switch and just from the players, from the fans, for everything, it was tough, man. It really was. And, you know, that's why I said, like, mentally, this has got to be the most mentally challenged team that we've seen in the NFL in a long time with the way that they've lost games. Just think, if the ball bounced the other way, you know, we'd be talking about a Bears team right now that'd be, you know, getting ready to make a playoff push. So yeah, it's a literally, I mean, the NFL, the margin of victory is so narrow, man, as you can see, as we've seen as Bear fans and analysts, you know, time and time again. So, you know, they got to come out this week and put all that bad stuff behind them and get ready to play another divisional opponent in the Minnesota Vikings, because right now, you know, this is the meteor schedule. You got the Vikings, you got the Detroit Lions, who just been on a run. You got them on Christmas Day. So, I mean, Thanksgiving Day. Yeah. So you're going to have, the whole world is going to be watching. You know what I mean? And
I'm scared, bro.
I know, right?
I'm so scared of what that game might become, bro, because I'm just like,
man, that's a tough place to play. It's a cool place to play. I always love playing there, but you know, that team, Detroit, I mean, they're rolling. They are. They've got the players, right, that have a level of physicality. They got the players that are locked in. They're mentally tough. You know, their coach is mentally tough. You know, I played with Dan Campbell down in Dallas. He's always been that type of fiery guy. He's got that team believing, right? He's got that team. They play well on the road. They play well at home. They make a mistake, they overcome it. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're built to win. They really are. He's got that culture. They're built to win. And, you know, the Bears team that we have, you know, you look at on paper, you look at the roster, and you say, okay, are we built to win? And I would say no, because, you know, we were built from the outside in, meaning we were built on a perimeter and not in the trenches. So that's why I feel like this team isn't built to win. Do we have a lot of talent? Yes, we got a ton of talent in terms of out on the perimeter skill position wise, right, on the defense, the secondary, the linebackers. But, you know, we're thin where it matters most, in the trenches. And I think that's, you know, a part of the reason why we're in the situation we're in now. But it's also, just like you said, just the decisions, critical situations, execution, you know, especially in key moments in the game, in particular the end of games, and which is why the Bears are on the outside looking in, you know, at the playoffs.
Yeah, it's and the fact that you've watched the coaching staff take it away from you twice, right? I mean, say what you want about Justin Fields. He had three wins. They had three wins, and you literally watch the coaching staff just be like, let me get that up off of you, my guy. We got to take those wins away. I think though, you know, a shift has happened up at Halas Hall now, whether it is a shift that continues or that I think ends up getting you more wins, that's yet to be seen. That it depends on when you look at a stat like that, J-Mac, you're just like, all right, so we're going to lose a lot of games that maybe we should be in. But realistically speaking, Caleb Williams said something that I thought stood out when he talked about the biggest change from Shane Waldron to Thomas Brown. And he said, as soon as the play is done, he is in my ear telling me the next play. It kind of gives us that moment to assess things and gives us that moment to figure out what we're looking at, and then we can go to work, right? Yep. How important is that for a rookie quarterback, or just for an offense in general, getting that play in that quickly? Because how he talked about it, it almost was like, yes, that's the thing that kind of changed how we were able to go out and play offense, because we weren't feeling rushed at the line. We weren't feeling like we had to get this entire, you know, 12 to 14 word play in, get lined up, get set up, figure it all out. And then all of a sudden, Seth Hutton out. Now the operation is thrown off. Now you're seeing false starts. Now you're seeing illegal motions and things like that, because everyone's feeling rushed at the line. How important is just that aspect of it? Because Caleb makes it seem like that's the thing that kind of fixed everything.
Yeah, the rhythm is key. You know what I mean? And it also depends upon what type of tempo you're going offensively. So if you're huddling up, you still want to get the play in quick. You know, it's like you said, so that young quarterback can get the line of scrimmage. You can decipher what the defense giving you pre-snap, right? You can execute any motions or shifts that you have without feeling rushed, right? Without having to look at the clock and seeing 3-2-1 snapping the ball and not having a clear pre-snap picture of what the defense is giving you. And we know at post-snap that picture is going to change in the NFL, but at least you have an idea pre-snap to kind of go through, you know, what could be, you know, in terms of in the pass game, what my progressions may be, you know, in the run game. Okay, I like this look. Are we going to check it? It just gives them time. And as a play caller, the good play callers, they're always, you know, they're calling the current play, but they're always two plays ahead, which they already know what the next two players are going to be, or have an idea of what the next two players are going to be based upon the situation. And that's what you saw from Thomas Brown. You saw you know, up tempo. You saw a good rhythm. You know what I mean? It wasn't like, okay, now we're going up tempo. Now we're going slow. We're going slow because the play call is taking so long to get in. Bam, we waste a timeout. When your quarterback and your offense was in rhythm, now that disrupts that rhythm. Now we become stagnant offense because, you know, we were in a groove. We were on the move. And then all of a sudden, bam, now we got to stop because our play caller doesn't have the play call in. You know, so that's very key. And another thing that I think in terms of the development with Caleb, and I think I posted this on Twitter, I interviewed him in the locker room and I'd asked him, I said, you know, throughout your time in the NFL, what is the biggest thing that you've learned? And he said the possessions, which was awesome. Yeah. Possessions, he said, the limited amount of possessions, which is key. They had seven offensive possessions on Sunday, right? And he said it's the details with every possession, which every play has that much more emphasis or that much more importance because you only get so many possessions in this game. And, you know, I thought that was a real big – I thought that was an awesome, intelligent answer that just shows me that you have a quarterback that's learning. You have a quarterback that understands that, hey, I can't be out here just running around, moonlighting with the ball, throwing the ball all crazy all over the place because I have to try to maximize every single possession that we have because we're not going to get a lot of them. So it's good to see your quarterback learning from his mistakes. It's good to see your quarterback making plays, especially in critical situations like we saw last week. I think they were 9 of 16 on third down, something we haven't seen the entire year. What were they, 100% on fourth down, Pat?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
And you saw one fourth down conversion, him, you know, sit in the pocket, take the check down to Roshan to get a first down, something that we didn't see early on in the season. So that's a positive you take away from this game. You know, you try to find the silver lining. Where's the positive in this game? That's one of the positives you take away from this game.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think there are positives to take away, but just the fact that it looked that different, you know, it is funny because as the fans outside looking in, the people that haven't been in an NFL huddle, I think there really is this belief that it doesn't have to be this perfect marriage of play caller, offensive line, quarterback, running back makes the right block, wide receiver sets up a block that opens up another receiver, right? Like this perfect ballet of movement. Because we see so many broken plays end up working out at times. But when I heard that today, I was like, there was one thing off, and we kept talking about the communication. Everybody kept saying the communication is off. We're thinking communication between Caleb and DJ. We're thinking, oh, Keenan's off. He's not on the same page. Rome doesn't have an understanding of where Caleb is looking to go with the football. When really it seems like the communication was the guy who's in the headset calling the plays. And I asked you this last week when we were in the booth, J-Mac, you know, like the one play where it seems like it's a one read play, the entire offensive line shifts to the left. I think Roshan Johnson was in the game. He's blocking left. It seemed like the one route was Cole Kmet, who ends up running right and Caleb's rolling left. You know what I mean? It just seemed like that communication was so off. And I do wonder, you know, I would assume Shane Waldron could call plays. He did it in Seattle, but it seems like the voice that they have now maybe is more of a calming voice, getting that more of a confident voice, not you know, doing the shaky Shane on the sidelines there. And it seems like it's really calmed this offense down, has got them in a good position, which I think gives me a little bit more confidence going into this Minnesota game that is something that can be replicated.
Yeah, and you saw, like, you talk about the communication, the operation of the play, right? I mean, play calls are long, so if you're trying to rush a play call into your quarterback, he has to have time to, you know, to hear that play call, but then, you know, give that play call to the entire huddle within a certain amount of time. Well, if he's rushing it, he leaves out something, leaves out a motion or shift that's key to making that play work, or that's key to helping that play execute. Well, it's not going to work. You know what I'm saying? And I think if you listen to the guys, the offensive guys, the biggest change they said with Thomas Brown was, you know, I think he was holding them accountable to a higher standard in terms of not letting, you know, basic fundamentals and details not being overlooked. And, you know, you can tell that Caleb was really looking for that check down this week. Yeah. You know what I mean? He was running with intent. He was decisive when he needed to run. And in particular, you know, the Packers played a lot of man coverage. So you're running the receivers off, you know, whoever's covering the receiver, their backs turned because they're covering that receiver. It gives you running lanes, and Caleb exploited that. But, you know, you can tell that Thomas was like, hey, you know what? Take the check down when it's there. You know, get the ball to your guys. Let them make plays. You know what I mean? Guys, you have to get on your blocks out on the perimeter. If we throw this ball out there, if we throw a quick screen to DJ Kenny, you got to make the block. The play is there. We want to use our speed and space. We want to get our playmakers in space and effect. We want to, you know, attack, you know, the entire defense. You know what I mean? And he really had guys out there playing. And that's what we talked about last week, Pat. We talked about, you know, what would Thomas Brown bring to this offense? And I say the energy probably about 50 times. If you looked at it, that's what this offense played with. They played with good energy. They played with good passion. They played with good physicality. I mean, you saw Braxton Jones. We go toss crack, toss the ball to DeAndre Swift. Braxton Jones pulls around and just destroys the safety. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the physicality that you have to play with week in and week out if you want to win games. But that type of physicality and that energy just doesn't show up on Sunday, right? You can't just flip that switch and say, okay, today we're going to play physical because it's game day. No, that has to build throughout practice. That's got to start on Wednesday when you're going through first and second downs, Thursday when you're going through third downs and critical situations, Friday when you may be going short yardage, goal line, coming out, all those different scenarios. Like, all of that stuff starts during the week of preparation, right? Because you know what type of game you're going to be in. And this week, I'm sure, like today, you know, first and second down, they're practicing all the exotic looks that they can see on first and second down. You know what I mean? Yeah. Showing up their protections. Hey, we're going to go. If we go five, man, we know that ball's got to be out quick because they're going to bring more than we can pick up. You know, if we're going seven-man protection, you know what I mean? All seven guys got to get on your, you know, you've got to be, when you're one-on-one matchup receivers, you got to get open because now we don't have as many routes out there for Caleb. Caleb, you can't moonlight with the ball. That ball's got to come out quick, and it's got to be in the right space. You know what I'm saying? Because this is a team that will, you know, generate takeaways. I think they're what? First or what are they in interceptions? First or second? They might be first.
I believe the Vikings are first in interceptions, but I haven't checked since the last game.
So yeah, so, I mean, just it's stuff like that. You know what I mean, Pat? Like, you have to make sure that, like Caleb said, his understanding of maximizing each possession you get because you're going to need it in this game. You really are.
Yeah, no, 100%. And the Minnesota Vikings are first, 15 interceptions on the season in the 2024 season so far, on pace for 28 interceptions on the season. So a lot of picks, a lot of picks. Don't put yourself in a position where you're throwing some of those picks. That's kind of that would be a backbreaker heading into this week.
Yeah.
I think it speaks to, though, right, when you're coming up against this team, the one thing that Caleb Williams has been solid at has been going up against the blitz. And I think that's an interesting stat because, J-Mac, I saw this in an article. I think Ben Slowick wrote this article yesterday where he was talking about, you know, he graded the four rookie quarterbacks. And right now he has Caleb Williams as the worst of the bunch, which I got to say, it sucks. I have to agree. I also caveat that by saying I also think this is a really good bunch of quarterbacks. So right now, Caleb being fourth doesn't hurt me as much because I think these are guys that are going to be staples in the NFL for a while now. I mean, when I see Drake May play, literally just like, oh, this guy gets it. This guy understands. And he's got a worse situation than Caleb. There's nothing good going on over there, but I like what he's doing. But he broke this down, some of the negatives that Caleb Williams has had going against him this season. And I think it really speaks to kind of some of the success that Caleb has had even through the struggles. 59 quick pressures, meaning pressures of 2 seconds or less, 33 unblocked pressures, and he's had 15 extended pressures. Basically, he's holding the football too long of 5 seconds or more. Each of those is top five in the NFL right now, and this young man has still been able to kind of figure going through his struggles, right? Most rookie quarterbacks would go through struggles with numbers like that, but still being able to come out on the other side and being able to, in a Packers game versus probably the best defense he's seen this season, go out there and play some really good football. Like, when I see those numbers, when I just think Thomas Brown called an offense that spoke to those numbers versus Shane Waldron, who kind of didn't. And Caleb said today, he said, we didn't change anything up. Thomas didn't tell me to run more. He didn't tell me, you know, that he didn't simplify the offense for me. But something definitely changed in that building because this was a Caleb Williams that we haven't seen except for three times this season with using his legs. He ran this much basically only against the Rams, the Commanders, and the Packers, where he was pressured on over 50% of his dropbacks. Just like 50% of his dropbacks, Jamie. That's nuts. You know what I mean? Like, those are the things that why I look at Caleb Williams and I'm like, no, this is a guy that gets it. This is a guy that understands the game. He's seeing things at the line that every quarterback can't see. Yes, he's going through his struggles, but I don't think that it's the end of the world where he's at right now.
Yeah, and you look at it too. I think a lot of it, when you look at a lot of these rookie quarterbacks, and we talked about this, you know, when Caleb was drafted, everybody was saying he's in the best spot for a rookie quarterback to succeed. Yeah, because he had weapons on the perimeter. But when you go back and really analyze that, was he in the best spot in terms of who was directing the offense? You see what I'm saying? Look at Bo Nix. Sean Payton's directing that offense.
Coaching matters.
A guy who's had a good track record of calling plays, a good track record of developing quarterbacks. Yeah, he had Drew Brees, but he did a great job of, I mean, him and Drew Brees put together some crazy offensive game plans and had, you know, a lot of success offensively. Sean Payton's had that track record. You know what I'm saying? Look at Cliff Kingsbury, who understood what type of quarterback he was getting in Jaden Daniels and made sure the game plan fit the skill set, made sure that he wasn't trying to put too much on this rookie so that way he could continue to play fast. You know what I'm saying? So I think that also, when you look at that, you say, okay, you know, I have a guy who is in a good situation. You know what I mean? With like I talked about with those other quarterbacks. Now you look at Caleb's situation, like you're in a situation with a play caller, didn't have a lot of good success in Seattle. Now you bring him in, rookie quarterback. You try to put too much on Caleb. Caleb, hey, you make the protection call. If you see something different, hey, Caleb, you have the freedom to check to a pass if we don't like the run. You know, hey, Caleb, I'm not going to get on you. Well, you didn't take the check on, even though you should, but I'm not going to get on you. I'd rather, you know, crack jokes at you and be your best friend, which I don't know if that's true. But at the same time, like, you hear guys talk about it. We heard guys talk about Shane didn't hold guys accountable, you know, to an extent. So it goes back to, hey, like, you can't be buddy-buddy with everybody, but you've got to, if you're that offensive coordinator and directing that offense, everybody's got to be accountable, no matter who it is.
J-Mac, I have a tough time dealing in coincidences, right? I think that, you know, more times than not, there's a reason behind why something happens. I don't think that it is a coincidence that 8 hours after Thomas Brown is hired, Nate Davis is no longer on the team. He came out in his press conference. He talked about accountability. He talked about effort. He talked about going the extra mile. He talked about being there for your team. Like, those are things that he stands on and that are his laurels. And I think that it's going to do a great deal for this Bears offense, hopefully, the rest of the season, because his principles, it seems like to me, the team exuded that in this first week. And you can say, you know, everybody gets a bump the first week of a new guy coming in. You're excited. The old guy's not there anymore. Now you're going to figure some things out. I think certain things get bumped, right? I said this yesterday. I don't think Keenan Allen's going to block like that the rest of the season. Like, Keenan Allen's not blocking, really. Like, I don't expect that to keep up. But I do expect Thomas Brown to hold Keenan Allen accountable when he doesn't. I think that those are the things that he does well, that at least coming in, right? And everybody around the league that I have talked to that has been with this guy says the same thing about him. He brings energy, he brings the personality, and he brings accountability. And that's something that we've talked about all season. Heck, forget all season. Me and you have been talking about this since Chase Claypool, dog. It just seems like there hasn't been enough accountability with this Bears team over the last 3 years.
Yeah, and that's you talk about, like we talked about, I think, on the post-game show, like, guys, there's guys who want to be coached hard. There's guys that you have to hold accountable, right? And, yeah, it starts with the coach, you know, holding guys accountable. But like I talked about before, if you want to be a great team, it may start with the coach, but it's got to end with the players. You know what I mean? Like, it's got to end with the players making sure that they're holding each other accountable. You know, and if you're that voice, you've got to make sure you're doing everything right. So it's a lot of things, man. And when you hear things like that, you're like, man, like, that's why you saw the inefficiency on offense, because don't worry, Caleb, you'll throw the check down on Sunday. Don't worry, Kenny, you can shorten that 5 yard speed out. You know, you can run it at 3 yards today. Just make sure you run it at 5 yards on Sunday. No, that's not how you win.
It's so glaring, dog. It is so glaring, especially when you hear some of the comments from the players afterwards. And Keenan pulled no punches. He was like, I think it was a little soft. Wait a minute, dog. He's the body's been cold for 2 minutes. You could at least let him get it out of here first. Hey, Bears fans, it's Pat the Designer here. I know that you guys have some epic fan caves, and I'm teaming up with Miller Lite to find the best of the best. Head over to MillerLiteFanCave.com and share your photos or videos of your ultimate Bears cave. Each week, I'll be highlighting some of the best setups around Chicago and stopping by with some Miller Lite and Bears swag. And the ultimate fan cave, if you have it, you'll score tickets to the game in Green Bay when the Bears get revenge. We're getting that revenge. And a luxury tailgate in the Tundra Trio. So make sure that you go over to MillerLiteFanCave.com, submit your photos and videos of your ultimate Bears fan cave right now. All right, let's finish it out with this, J-Mac, because, listen, we've got a lot of positivity. I feel like the offense is moving. As much as maybe we have some concerns around the defense, defense did hold them to 20 points. That's not a bad day defensively. And man, you talk about one of the finding ways to lose. You know, your number, maybe the number one coverage corner in the NFL fell down. You know what I mean? On a big pass. Like, it's just like, okay, this is just happening.
What made it even disheartening, like, you know, he talked about it. Like, that was, he felt like, you know, on that route, he was going to undercut the route and there's going to be an interception. So it made it even worse. And he's one of the last guys off the field just sitting there because he knows, you know, like Jalen Johnson, like, he's a guy, he ain't got to worry about working. He's always the last guy.
Packers yet, I don't believe.
Yeah, like, he's a guy who, you know, he busts his behind. You know what I mean? He's always practicing. He's always out there trying to play. He's playing at a high level. Just that one play. And he talked about it. You know, if he doesn't trip and fall or touches the guy down, then that's not an explosive play, you know, and leads to what we saw at the end of the game. But, you know, it is tough. Like we said, everything that can go bad for this team has gone bad this year. And that's why, you know, I feel like the biggest thing that they've got to make sure they're prepared, you know, not just the X's and O's, but it's their mind. What is the mindset? You know, mentally, they got to be mentally tough. Forget all that stuff, what just happened. And it's hard because everybody's talking about it. You know, you're in the locker room. Now you're questioning yourself, like, are we cursed? Like, can we win a game? You know what I mean? Like it's tough. So you got to go out there and keep putting your best foot forward and go out there and try to win, man, and to continue to play with energy and emotion and build upon, you know, the positives that you can take away from that last game and apply to this one and go out there and try to be a Vikings team. Because if you start feeling sorry for yourself, guess what? Minnesota's going to whip you behind. They're going to walk up and down the field on you. And then you got to play a Detroit Lions team on Thanksgiving that's going to do the same thing to you. And then you think you got to be mentally tough then. Well, you're better because now, I mean – the whole building is going to implode.
J-Mac, it could get ugly over the next couple of weeks. What's the best offensive game plan to attack how Brian Flores is going to blitz this team?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's – you got to establish the run. You know what I mean? You have to establish run. Despite how good they are, you know, against the run, you made some strides last week running the football, and you got to continue to build upon that because you will not win this game saying we're going to win this game relying on Caleb Williams' arm. You're not going to win this game. You know what I mean? They want you to do that. They want you to drop back 30, 35 times a game because they're going to tee off on you. And you've got to be able to run the ball. You know, you've got to be able to at least use the run to keep them off balance, slow down that pass rush. But pass protection is key. And if you're not sure, if that pass protection isn't sure up, it's going to be a tough day. So it's going to be a big challenge for Caleb as a rookie to see. You know, he hasn't seen a defense like this, the type of looks he's going to get. The receivers got to be on their P's and Q's in terms of, you know, their hot routes and what type of route will adjust based upon what type of pressure they're seeing. So it's going to be a challenge. It's going to be fun. And defensively, like, you know, you've done a good job of making plays, but you got to make the plays that need to be made, like, in critical situations.
Yeah.
That's something we haven't seen, you know, all year. And that goes back to, you know, it's Washington. It goes back to Arizona, you know, giving up a touchdown before the half. I mean, you've seen it time and time again. You've seen a good defense. But when it matters most, have they really been a good defense when it matters most? Mm. And they're going to have to be that defense this Sunday against an explosive offense by the Vikings.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see kind of where the Bears are. DeAndre Swift, Matt Eberflus talked about the day dealing with a groin injury. He says he's optimistic, says he should be back but that, you know, that they have to be careful with it. It's never, it always makes me nervous when a coach is like, yeah, you know, he's a quick twitch guy. You know what I mean? Like, so he's an NFL player. I would assume he's a quick twitch guy. He plays in the league. I would hope as a running back, he twitches a little bit.
Yeah. Gotta be quick.
I think also, though, you have to have the conversation about Dallas Turner versus Braxton Jones. That's going to be a problem. And Braxton, to me, had his best day. Hopefully you're able to sustain that. But we saw Braxton versus another one of Dallas Turner's contemporaries out with the Rams and Jared Verse, and it did not go well. The game plan was, I'm going to go through your chest all day. I think I need Braxton. To me, on the Morning Breeze, we talked about him. He has to be one of the mainstays of this game for this game to go well, because you would assume with how strong he is in the run game, you're going to run to his side. You would assume that they're going to try and push through him. Like, I think those are two things to really keep an eye on. And of course, Tevin Jenkins back at practice today. So good to hear that, limited capacity, but hopefully he's able to get back on the field and stay on the field, because Ryan Bates is in concussion protocol. And you're rolling with Jake Curran versus one of the best defensive lines in football.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. You know, it's you know, for Thomas Brown, what type of pass protection for him and Coach Morgan? You know, what are ways that we can, you know, not leave Braxton Jones singled up on Dallas Turner, you know, every time we drop back? What are ways we can help out our guards, Matt Pryor and Jake Curran? You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. What are – pass protection wise, what do we do to change up the look so they can't, you know, get a beat on what we're doing, but also to make sure we help where we're weak at? You know, Braxton Jones on the edge, obviously Jake Curran on, you know, on that whole left side is going to be
Darnell Wright as well. Yeah, so, yeah, I would assume you're probably in a lot of max protect this week, wouldn't you think, J-Mac?
Yeah, I mean, seven man protections, but you don't want to just limit yourself because you still want to get guys out. So I would say a lot of base protection. I could see where the tight end in the back chipping on their way out to a route. Yeah. Or they're, you know, things like that, or a full slide in which you saw it last week where the line full slid one way, and then you had Roshan come back the opposite way and the seven-man protection with Cole. So, you know, those are the different ways that you can get a seven-man protection, but also changing the look so the defense can't get a bead on you. So I would expect to see a lot more of that. And, you know, we'll see what type of routes that Thomas Brown puts together to challenge his Vikings secondary, but also to beat the pressure. That's going to be key. So it's going to be a good matchup, man. I'm excited. I'm excited to see Jalen Johnson go up against Justin Jefferson. I'm excited for that matchup up close and personal.
It's been interesting. Yeah. As a player, and I know you're on the offensive side, right? But if you get all the yards but don't get touchdowns, do you count that as a successful day?
If your team wins, yeah, because you help put you
they
help
have one.
Yeah, you help you help your team get to where they could score. And Jalen, like, remember, Justin didn't play in this game last year, so Jalen didn't get to face him. He didn't play. So
there's been a back and forth on this. Dare I say it's a little? I'm not gonna say it's the same, but shades of Peanut Megatron. There's been some huge days. For Justin Jefferson, there's been some very quiet days for Justin Jefferson as well versus Jalen Johnson. I think Jefferson's up one game right now on Jalen, but I mean, the wins is where it comes down. He's got more of those on Jalen than not. Yeah. Hey, man, we appreciate you guys for tuning in, showing love. Hit that like button, subscribe to the page, leave a 5-star review. Y'all know what to do. What's your prediction, J-Mac? We got a dub?
I'm just watching, man. I just watched the game.
Oh, we at that point in the season.
I'm just watching the game. I'm just going to watch the game, man.
What's your prediction? All right, hey, man. You know,
I'm going to watch the game, man. You go talk about predictions. I would have never predicted we'd be losing the way we're losing. That's my prediction. You know what I'm saying? Like,
would have never predicted Flus with a 1 in 68 million chance to lose all six of those games, but he found a way to do it.
Man,
poor Jason McKee.
No prediction for me, man.
The designer back at it again. Y'all stay safe out there, Chicago. Bear down, one love. Let's hope we come away with a win. Maybe. Little something. I don't know. If not, it's gonna be ugly. Peace.